Oh, it started. Okay. So I'll just say this is John Murphy and Lindsay Zaya, and we're here with Jackie Harris, Registrar of the City of Lexington, and interviewing her on behalf of the Virginians for America First. So first question, I think you already answered. So is this your first interview with VFAF?
And again, not to the best of my knowledge, I believe we've done one before.
Yes. Okay.
Forgive me. I have the ubiquitous Coke Zero.
Okay. What is your biggest concern about the upcoming election? Some of these are open-ended questions.
Locally, I would say it's just a matter of resource management. I have not felt that we have any particular threat environment here that we've been alerted to, or that I perceive at this time. Otherwise, if there were one, that would be my primary concern, is if I felt that there was any threat environment towards my staff or the officers of election or the personnel that we have on site. Obviously, their safety is paramount along with the mm-hmm. public safety. So, that's always top of the list, but at this point in time, I'm not perceiving any threat environment. Okay. So that being said, really, it's just resource management. We're making sure that we've got the right amount of people, funds, materials, et cetera, in place to run the election and have all of our continuity of operation plans set in place.
Okay. All right.
The city has been very generous to us, though. I think they've been very supportive over this year.
And the next one is, any other major concerns?
Not at this time.
Okay. Okay. Do you feel like you have the resources, equipment, personnel, and training needed to run an effective election in November?
I do. I have alerted the city, you're aware of this, John, so I'll try to repeat things that I know John already knows because it's for the purpose of the interview. We have alerted the city that our voting equipment, was acquired in 2016, I believe, so we're looking to say, there's a expected 10-year life cycle on those, and so we're, recommending that the city set aside resources on an annual basis towards that one-time big expenditure so that when the time comes, it's not a hit to the budget that's unanticipated.
Mm-hmm.
So as of yet, we don't have a set aside going, but I'd like to see that in place.
Are those expenses covered by the locality? Is that what you're saying earlier?
It is, yeah, okay. It's a capital expenditure. Way back when, so I'm going back to HAVA, when the HAVA funds came out, I think they were released in 2002, somewhere around in there. Of course, there was the big buy up because there were federal funds made available. And I think that's when a lot of people acquired voting systems. And they've, most places by now have done some form of replacement since that original purchase, but there's never been another giant influx of funds coming in. So it's the expense rests on the localities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have an adequate number of precinct staff that meet the requirements of having equally declared Republicans and Democrats?
We're in pretty good shape. So my working documents, excuse all the scribbles, but when I lay out who's being... By the way, we weren't sure if you were going to be this off right here. I wasn't sure with the school... How you feel about November? So tell me off the record if you
Well,
know
no, I can. Yeah, I can say my problem is not so much the school. It's a whole other story. I think I may have mentioned this tutoring program
we do
at horse shows.
Yes, yeah.
And we're in Kansas City every November, and depending on the calendar, it sometimes falls on election week. Sometimes it doesn't. This year, it falls on election week.
Okay, so I thought you had told me that you would, but nonetheless, when I lay out the people that were asking, you'll see I identify who we have as a Republican, who we have who is identified as an unaffiliated, which is allowed under Virginia code, and then who we have identified as a Democrat. So we're pretty well spaced out. When we get down to like the central absentee precinct, You know, we had John Murphy, are you available? Maybe question mark. Because we, you know, when you look at individuals who have worked in a particular area of expertise, City of Lexington is by demographically on the blue side of the house, you know, so there's a smaller pool of Republican officers of election from which we draw, but we worked with the party chair before the primary, and we actually kind of added additional personnel so that we could meet that requirement during the primary. So I think we've got enough people to dip into, but I'm going to have to probably pull some of our new folks into central absentee. But okay. We do, you know, a lot of right, work for that balance.
You put a lot of effort into
that. Yeah, the balance is forefront of our approach.
Right. And this isn't on the survey, but will you be having the officers of election during early voting?
To a small degree. So since we've now got the space, our expectation is that I'll have probably Jane or Jamie in the office doing the check-ins, and then we'll probably utilize one or two officers of election, depending on what we look with turnout-wise. So this is going to be kind of a question mark election on volume.
Right.
But I think that space allocation is going to help us. You not necessarily have to have quite as many people on payroll, because it's a challenge when we typically run two shifts a day and we were having three officers of election. So you have, you know, six people per day. It ends up being 192 shifts that we try to fill. And when you look at it, what is effectively a 1.3 person office, trying to manage 192 shifts, it became quite a juggle, because invariably, you know, people have lives, they have things that come up, you know, right. COVID, you're like, oh, I'm sick, or this happened. And so it's the more we can use full-time personnel or people that are committed to working, you know, a lot during the period, it makes our job internally a lot easier. So that's what we're shooting for. So I've got Jane and Jamie. These are two long-term staff people who are also sworn in as officer, as assistant registrars,
okay.
Deputy registrars now that the law has changed.
So okay. You brought on the deputies like to help you, or did you say they were here already?
They were here. So Jane was here when I joined staff. She was the person who was kind of temporarily filling in after my predecessor left. There was actually a month with no designated registrar. So she was a part-time temporary individual who just worked a little bit here, like filling in to answer phones. She was not a fully trained staff person, but she has been around for
stepped
a year. Just she really stepped up to the plate.
That's
but
awesome.
She's really trying to retire. She's several years older than I am. And so she's wanting to, you know, bring it back to something more retirement looking. And then we have another person, Jamie DeBruhl, who's also a semi-retired officer of election who does some work for us.
Awesome.
Great. Did each precinct, well, you only have one precinct,
yes.
Have partisan observers for the last election? This is primary and general election. But
in the primary? Think we did.
No, we didn't.
I didn't think anyone came.
I can answer that one. We didn't have anyone there.
And I think we did have both Republicans and Democrats during the day. I don't think anyone stayed throughout the entire day at the general, which is not that unusual. And my experience in general is that you get the morning people who want to do the checklist, like, you know, your preferred voters arriving, and then go out and, you know, call in the troops, and then the end of day, the folks that want to be locked in with us and wait for the results to come off the machines.
Right. Okay. All right. Does the county health department send a list of deceased people to your office every month so that they can be removed from the voter rolls?
No. And by law, we can only now remove voters from the rolls under two circumstances. One is that the state registrar, so that all of our death material comes through the state system, through the state health department. And the law changed in this last General Assembly session that needs to be a weekly notification. The other way we can remove a voter as deceased is if the voter's family provides a copy of the death certificate. So we have started looking, you know, typically localities would use obituaries. And they're like, you may not use an obituary, but if we see an obituary and we don't see a notification coming through from the state in a timely manner, we will send a notice to the voter's family, just very similar to the notice the state sends, you know, condolences, et cetera, but let them know that if they can provide us with a photocopy, we don't want people spending money on death certificates, but if they have a photocopy to provide to us, that would allow us to remove that voter's name from the Lexington rolls.
So if a family member of a deceased person comes in with a death certificate, then that's an automatic.
We can use that. Yep, that is a legal source, and we can make a photocopy and give them the original back and just use that as a documentation that we can attach to the record.
Okay.
So
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so did the code change to limit it to those two options? Like, was it more open and broad?
I think the code had never been, you know, we're still in rural states, so if it doesn't say you can, then you can't.
Right.
But it had been broadly interpreted before that, and it had been a monthly report from the state, and so I think the addition of the frequency, you know, they then kind of narrowed the definition. And I don't think that is necessarily codified either, but I think that's the, you know, we get our directive from the state, and that's our guidance that we're working under.
Okay.
And are you getting the information weekly?
We are. It's new enough that we've not yet been able to see a pattern, not to see what the lag is. There's always a lag, you know, for the obituary tends to show up prior to a funeral, you know, so you're literally seeing the obituary within 72 hours of someone passing. The state archives, you know.
That'll take a while.
Bureaucracy is a much more slow-moving iceberg. So we're looking to see what the lag looks like.
Okay.
But just so that we can affirm that we're being able. So we're tracking and we're pulling records.
You do want to watch the obituaries.
Yeah.
Okay.
We got a digital subscription to the local newspaper, which tends to be the best source here.
Great. Aries. I don't remember how to spell that. Okay. What do you do when a relative notifies you that a family member is deceased and needs to be dropped from the voter rolls?
So at this point in time, the answer will be, there used to be a form we would have them fill out, and they could fill that out at the polls.
Mm-hmm.
But since we've gotten this new, we'll request that copy of the death certificate.
Okay. During the last election cycle, primary or general, did you have complaints from voters that someone had voted in their name? For example, was a mail-in ballot received and the voter claimed they did not cast a mail-in vote? Was there any you already voted scenarios?
None that I'm aware of. None that came to me.
All right.
And I think our chief officer would have called me.
If it had
the polls.
Yeah.
We'll have to ask him.
I don't recall any, Jackie.
Yeah, I don't think that happened.
Do your absentee voter drop boxes have video monitoring that is monitored 24/7?
Yes.
If so, who is reviewing the video to ensure there are no issues?
We don't do an automatic review of the footage. We have a process for chain of custody of those forms, and we take two people out, you know, and have a form that we sign off and lock up the ballots and walk in the room and unlock the ballots and have a pickup and receipt. There's never been a concern expressed. If there was one, we could always review footage. It helps, I think, that the police station is on the other side of the parking lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we, you know, unrelated to that really, but just trying to look at the expense of that, maintaining that video footage, and there's a lot of discussion about what the law actually says about how long you retain it.
Mm-hmm.
But if we do need to retain it the full 22 months, I think it becomes cost prohibitive. So we're actually looking into options. You know, this is totally up to the electoral board, it's not my call, but potentially moving it into the office, which can then be a manned and takes away the 24 video, you know, coverage. So with the office being there, it's an option that's on the table. We've yet to make a decision on that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a possibility.
Yep. And do you at least check to make sure that it's working? Like,
Yes.
So you see that it is functioning, but it's not like you're going back and say, oh, let's see who came last night.
Exactly.
Especially when you don't find anything in there except the water bill.
Yeah, right? Speaking of paint dry. And yeah, I guess it will trigger, you know, motion at night. So, you know, Nathan's like, well, you see a lot of squirrels run past and the police pulling in and out of the parking lot.
Mm-hmm. How many draw boxes are there?
We just have one.
Just the one.
So we have the one that is it's a giant blue mm-hmm. mailbox right outside this with a video above it. And then we'll have one at the poles, but that's actually inside and manned.
Okay.
So I refer to it as the nuclear football. Like, no, yeah, never leave this.
Yep.
Go to the bathroom, take it with you. But it's a zip locked. It's structured in such a way that it'd be almost impossible to put more than a single ballot through the opening at the top. There's metal closure around it that really restricts access to that.
Mm-hmm. So that makes it pretty easy then.
Yes.
Right. I think I can answer this next one. Are all drop boxes emptied with the witness of sworn officers of the election with more than one sworn officer present?
Yes.
Well, yes, but yes, that is correct. Are party chairmen notified when drop boxes are emptied to have the option of sending partisan observers?
No. I've not ever done that. I'm sure.
I don't know why that'd be a requirement.
No, it's not. It's not a legal requirement in Virginia, but we check them every day.
Right.
Every 45 days. So.
Yep.
If they want to come down, we can make an appointment.
Okay. Let's see. Did the party chairman of both parties get invited to calibrate the machines during the last election?
Yeah, that's the logic and accuracy test. Yes, absolutely. And they both attended.
Yes. And yes. How are your voting machines stored and secured between elections?
They are in a locked room in this building inside a locked metal cage. So, locked building with a locked room with a locked metal cage inside.
Okay. And who has access to where voting machines are stored?
We have keys to the room. Public Works has keys to the room in case there's a water, you know, mm-hmm. the ceiling falls in or something like that. And those are the only two entities that have keys to that room.
Well, that's to the room, I guess, and the cages.
Oh, the cages are just ourselves, yeah. The cages are only we have.
So... registrar. Okay. Are there logs maintained of who accessed the storage area?
I have not kept a log. So Jane's in and out of there or something. But.
Okay. How are your voting machines and ballots stored and secured once they are sent to the voting precinct?
They remain locked in those cages, so we deliver them typically. I don't know if I can answer this on tape.
Okay.
This may be a security protocol that would best not be on tape. You know, I'm just thinking that, yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
They remain in locked cages at any point in time when they're not. I can say that.
Yes, and that's sufficient. That answers the question. Who delivers the voting machines to the voting precinct, and what is the procedure?
Public Works does the delivery, both a member of the electoral board and our staff accompany them. So they meet us here, they load up the trucks, the heavy equipment, and then drive it over there, and we meet them here, go with them, and go into the building with them and secure the equipment there.
All right. Great. Who delivers the ballots to the voting precinct? What is the procedure?
The Secretary of the Electoral Board delivers the ballots and then has the receipt for ballots that is signed off by the Chief Officer of Elections. So there's that transfer, and there's a state, you know, promulgated form for that that has the individual sign off on how many packages of, you know, 6 packages of 100 ballots have been received, and this many countywide ballots or citywide ballots.
Right. I remember
Lexington being unique in the, we only got one precinct, one ballot stunt. I guess this year, really more two ballot styles because of the federal only ballots.
All right. Let's see. Getting close to the end. Does your city utilize touchscreen voting or paper ballots? Ballots.
I mean, we use paper ballots. Our handicapped accessible device does have an interface for the voter that's, you know, as I always call it, kind of a glorified pen, but it really, what it does is produces a paper ballot output that is identical to the same format as all other ballots, and it's scanned through the scanner. So it doesn't, it's not a DRE, it's not a direct record electronic voting system. It's, it's just an accessible pen.
Let's see, when the post-election day canvass is conducted and there are discrepancies, are there counts of ballots themselves or just a reading of the computer-generated report?
There is a reading of the report. We don't open the materials because those are locked and provided to the clerk of the circuit court, and those are not opened without authority of the state or the courts, so those sealed boxes remain sealed. If there was a, you know, something that was not accounted for in the notes from the polls, you know, we could ask the state and the courts to unseal them. It's never been an issue for me.
Mm-hmm. Are they, is it just kind of left, if that was to happen, would it just be left to their discretion if they chose to unseal it or not, if they felt like there was
It would be, yeah, I mean, it would be up to the board to, you know, ask for those records to be unsealed unless another party, you know, privy to the canvas, you know, it's like, oh.
I guess they, but they could either deny or allow them to be unsealed at that point, though.
You know, there's always the contest, the election contest that could be, you know, lodged by a candidate for office. So if they felt that for some reason there was a discrepancy that warranted a contest of the election, again, you know, recounts, counting contests, or alleging that there's some impropriety or something else, whether it's miss, mel, you know, whatever the case may be, and can request that there be you know, something delving into the entire election, not necessarily just the numbers and the counts. So yeah, I would think that were there some egregious, it's not unusual over the course of the years to say, we think we should have one more or one less. And we do, when they open a packet of ballots, we count them ad nauseum, but really to verify every day that what you received, that it isn't a ballot, a package of 49, it's supposed to be a package of 50. You know, so we do a lot of justification of every ballot, but over the course of years, yes, I've had them say, I think we should have had one more or one less. Mm-hmm. But that's never raised an issue.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a longer question. House Bill 150 that goes into effect July 1st, 2022 requires that public body meetings such as the electoral board meetings to be posted on an official government website within 7 days of the final approval of minutes. This is in addition to the existing requirements of meeting dates, times, locations must also be posted in advance. How is your office meeting this requirement?
When we have a meeting upcoming, I post it in the building. I send that posting up to Janie Hostetter, who is the clerk to the city council and also the webmaster for the building. So she posts it on our website, on the city's website. And she is very, very fast about that. So usually within, you know, that same day, it's up on the web.
And then after, let's see, this is suggesting that after the meeting that their minutes be posted within 7 days. Is that a requirement now?
We sent her the minutes, so you'll see on our website, you'll see the minutes out there. We usually will send up the draft minutes, and then when the certified ones come in, we'll put those up to her.
Okay. Senate Bill 211 and House Bill 55, both of which go into effect July 1st, 2022, require that the state registrar of vital records transmit a weekly list of deceased individuals. General registrars will be required to promptly cancel the registrations of persons known to be deceased or otherwise disqualified from voting. How will your office address this new requirement, and who will be in charge of making sure that registrations are promptly canceled?
I will, but so when we log into our state system, VERIS is the title of the current system, but the statewide voter registration system, so the SVRS, there is a section in the upper corner that's a hopper, and that's where we'll see all outstanding division motor vehicle registrations, anything that's a notification of a felony conviction, adjudications of incapacity that might come through, and death records show up there as well. So it'll be like you have three death records to process. So it's really just a part of our morning routine. We go into it and clear the hopper every morning.
Okay. All right. All right, that was it. So I'll go ahead and stop the recording since we're done with that part.